We believe, we public believe, and the doctors believe that the way to get good health is to take drugs. The problem is that almost all the information that is coming to the public and almost all the information that is coming to their doctors is coming from the drug industry itself.
According to the CDC, 74% of doctor visits result in a prescription. As a result, 48% of Americans now use at least one prescription, but 3/4 of people, that's 3 out of 4 Americans, are misusing those prescriptions.
It is Thursday, the 9th day of June. This is your captain speaking. Fasten your seatbelts. We are in for some serious turbulence. We always are when Pam Colleen is in this morning. Pam Colleen can rock the boat or the airplane all by herself, but she also brings friends along once in a while who help her to do that, and boy, are we in for some turbulence this morning. They are running around drugstores all over London this morning, turning down the radio because they don't want their customers hearing what you're about to hear. We are about to meet a very special guest, Pam Colleen. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me in, as always.
I can sense that you're excited about our guest. I'm excited about our guest because I've been watching some of his videos early this morning, a book called Overdosed America.
That's right. Dr. John Abramson, a medical doctor, a lecturer at Harvard Medical School, and author of Overdosed America. And I like to call him an activist. I have an interview with him in my book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, where he very clearly outlines and warns people of this invasion from Big Pharma over society and how detrimental it is.
Well, let's bring on Dr. John Abramson. Doctor, appreciate you joining us this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
They just put up a new sign in the hallway of our radio station. They're decorating the station, and in huge letters on one side of the hallway, they've written the word passion. On the other side, they've written the word integrity. And down the hall a little further, the word perform. I think all of these describe you. Tell us about this decision you made to... Well, obviously you had an epiphany when you were working as a medical doctor and you came to the conclusion that something was wrong with what you were doing.
I sure did, Andy. I was working as a family doctor in about an hour north of Boston, Massachusetts in the United States, and was teaching medical students at Harvard and was actually going to take a year off and write a book about doctor-patient relationships to try to help medical students to understand how important it is to remember that the patient that they're learning how to take care of and that they're learning the science about is also a human being. And unless doctors relate to their patients as human beings with subjective experience or consciousness or soul or whatever language you want to use, they're not going to be able to really bring the fruits of medical science to the service of their patients. And I was pretty committed to writing that book because medical students get this onslaught of scientific education where they kind of learn that medical gaze to look at other people like they're machines instead of people with soul, human beings with souls. And was well along into writing that book when I got into the FDA's data in the United States Drug Authority data about two arthritis drugs, Vioxx and Celebrex. Now, these drugs had become blockbuster, billion-dollar sellers. And they were billion-dollar sellers not because they were more effective than the other drugs like ibuprofen or Aleve or naproxen that could be bought over the counter for very little money, but they were best sellers because they were claimed to be safer, cause fewer gastrointestinal problems. And the reason why we doctors believe that is because there was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine, in our two most trusted journals, the New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of the American Medical Association, that told us that these drugs were safer. Well, it turned out that the data that the FDA had deep in its bowels showed that this was not true, that Vioxx not only was not safer, but actually caused significantly more heart attack and stroke and cardiovascular problems than it protected people from GI problems, and that the study from Celebrex didn't show that the Celebrex was gentler on the stomach. The study was a 12-month study, but only 6 months of data had been published, and the company was dishonest about hiding the other 6 months. And when I realized that the two journals that we trust the most in the United States had misrepresented the scientific evidence that we doctors are trained to and held to a standard of practicing in accord with, I switched subjects. And as I started to look at other issues, at hormone replacement for women, at cholesterol lowering to prevent heart attack in people who don't have heart disease, at osteoporosis prevention in women, at the treatment of depression, at antipsychotic use in children, wherever I looked, where drugs were being sold in large numbers for large profits, I was seeing a distortion of the evidence that doctors are trained to rely upon. And that's what caused me to change books and to write Overdosed America to try and explain this crisis to American, to doctors and to the public.
Well, to try to make this really simple for our audience, doctor, let me tell you about two things that haunt me. Every time Pam Colleen comes in, she uses the phrase, and it haunts me, quite frankly, as a society, we are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever. The other thing that haunts me, again last night, watching ABC News, every commercial break is direct-to-consumer commercials saying, do you have this medical problem? We think you might have. You need this drug. And I'm just feeling a little overwhelmed by the aggressive advertising of the drug companies and the realization that they are huge, with more and more guests suggesting Big Pharma is now so big and so rich and so influential that they're pulling the levers both in Washington and in Ottawa.
That's exactly right. Now, let's look at both of those issues, the ads and the fact that we're getting fatter and sicker. The ads are an American phenomenon, and Canadians, please pay attention to this, because in the United States, our Supreme Court has interpreted the right of commercial speech as a freedom of speech. Corporations are granted the same rights as individuals, and therefore the drug companies are allowed to advertise. They aren't allowed to advertise in Canada. In fact, I worked on a suit that Ken West brought against Canadian government. Ken West wanted the right to broadcast drug ads in Canada, and that suit was abandoned, thankfully, so that Canada is not exposed to the kind of drug ads we have in the United States. But it has to do with giving corporations the rights of individuals and giving them the free speech rights. And we are inundated with drug ads, and they, as a family doctor, I found this very difficult to practice when people were coming in and requesting drugs that they had seen advertised. Now,
we have to take a short break, but I want you to give our audience just something to chew on during the commercial break. How big, how threatening, and how sinister is the agenda of Big Pharma?
Well, what's happening is that the whole medical agenda is being set to fulfill the fiduciary obligations of pharma to maximize its profits for its shareholders and not to produce the best health.
In other words, their agenda is money, not good health.
Not good health, and it's the government's function to counterbalance that. In Canada, you're doing a better job than we're doing in the United States, and we need to talk about that.
Wow. Sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever, folks. We need to talk about this subject. We'll keep the phone lines open, 643-1290. Back with Dr. John Abramson, who's just warming up, believe me, in just a moment. Here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK.
1290.
So what we've got is a situation where people respond to the ordinary stresses of life. And God knows we've got a lot of stresses now. But when they feel stressed, when they feel down, that they and their doctors turn to a pill instead of looking at how their lives are unfolding. And what we find when we put all the studies together of all the antidepressants, it's only the most severely depressed people who get a benefit from the antidepressants, and then it's only one out of four of those very severely depressed people who actually benefit.
Pam Colleen in conversation this morning with Dr. John Abramson, who was recently on Dr. Oz on all the big American TV shows. Dr. Abramson, the whole question of stress in society, we've become, we have a mindset where if we're stressed, there's got to be a pill. I got to pop a pill. How serious is this issue?
Andy, the issue is enormously serious. It really gets to the heart of where we're going as a society. The truth is that 70% of our health is a consequence of how we live our lives. Exercise, diet, environment, factors in our own control. Yet because of the profitability in the healthcare industry, the messages that we get, and more importantly, the messages that are delivered to doctors, are that the only way to achieve, to maintain good health and to reestablish good health is to do things that are very expensive. Now, in Canada, you spend about 60% as much as we do per person on healthcare. I know your system isn't perfect. I know there are some cues that can be aggravating and that it can be hard to be in a one-class system where you can't buy your way out. And I'm sure at times everybody's frustrated by that. But look at it in perspective. What you've got is a system that costs 60% as much as we're paying in the United States, and you've got better health for all of your Canadians, far better health than we Americans do, and we're losing ground to you despite the fact that we're spending almost twice as much money as you are. So the direction we're going in, I hope that we're setting a really strong example south of the border. And the example is, don't do what we're doing. It may look like it's advantageous to have MRIs and CAT scans and all this fancy technology. In Massachusetts, we have as many MRI scanners as you have in all of Canada. And there's no evidence that there's a medical benefit for having all those MRIs. The reason why those MRIs are put online is because accountants say that they're going to make money. It doesn't have to do with the health benefit of these things. So what we've got is a distortion. We've got pure economic activity that's taken over the real human need for good medical care and exploits us to make money for the healthcare industry.
Pam has a question for you.
Well, now you talk about health affairs and some research that was published showing that the more money that we have been spending on healthcare, the worse off we are. You mentioned this just a little while ago, where we think it has to be expensive, that health has to be complicated and expensive, and this is just not proving to be the case.
That's absolutely right, Pam. There's a study in health affairs that shows within the United States, the more money that is spent per person, state by state, the lower the quality of health care.
Wait a minute. I'm confused by what you just said. You'll have to say it again, doctor, for our audience, because they don't believe what you just said. What did you just say?
What I just said, and I want to be perfectly clear, intuitively you would think the more money you spend, the higher the quality care. And you would think in Canada, where you guys are very budget conscious and you set global budgets and you stick to them, that if you only had a little more money to spend, you'd get better quality care.
So can we flip around what you just said and assume that if we spend less money on health care, we'll be healthier?
It depends. There's a baseline, Andy. There is good health care is important, but spending more money than the baseline of what establishes good health care produces negative results.
So what do you propose doing? I mean, I think that you talk about revamping the FDA. You're a lecturer at Harvard Medical School. There's got to be different approaches in order to repair this very unsustainable system.
Pam, I think there's a core problem. And unless we get down to the core problem, we're just sort of dealing with the rearranging the frosting on the cake. The core problem is that we have allowed medical knowledge itself to become a commodity. Almost all of the medical knowledge that is produced by commercial enterprises, by the pharmaceutical industry, the device industry, the other healthcare industries, are producing the knowledge that gets published in the medical journals that doctors and patients and regulators and purchasers turn to as the scientific evidence that guides our medical care.
Let me just jump in and translate what you just said. What I heard you just say, Dr. John Abramson, is that all that we know about medicine basically today is not science at all. but propaganda from a huge industry which wants to suck more money out of all of us.
Let me just modify that just slightly and say that virtually all that we know, it comes from industry and is produced to maximize their profits. Now, some of that science is helpful, but most of that science is designed not to help our health, but to increase their profits. Okay. That is the truth.
Okay. Now, just a couple of weeks ago on this show, we had a fellow, and I'm still haunted by remembering what while he was on this show, went to his medicine cabinet and pulled out one by one, one after another, bottles and pills from his medicine cabinet. Doctor, 25 of them, and he said he's healthy as a horse. What do you say?
I say, that's one strong dude.
To put up with all those side effects.
But the problem here is you think that it's the public that's getting the wool pulled over their eyes, and that is in part true, and it's much more true in the United States where we have these rampant drug ads that you saw last night on ABC News, Andy, that leak across the border. But the real problem is that the information that the doctors are provided with in their journals and in their guidelines and by their professional societies is at least as controlled by the industry as the information that's available to the public.
We have just 1 minute before we have to break for a short news update. For all your medical colleagues here in London, doctors who might be listening at this very moment, what are you saying to them? You are living a lie. You're nothing more than a sales department for big pharma whose science, so-called science, is totally contaminated by greed?
What I'm saying to you doctors is that the time has come to understand that the odds are five times greater that a commercially sponsored study will conclude that the sponsor's drug is the treatment of choice compared to a non-commercially sponsored study of exactly the same drug. And if you accept commercially sponsored science as in your patient's interest, I think that's no longer a sin of omission, of ignoring, of not being aware of the commercial influence. I think it's become a sin of commission because we know that the commercial influence is subverting the quality of your care.
Doctor, real quick question before we get you to hold through the news update. I looked in my medicine cabinet last night. Neither my wife nor me take any drugs at all. Multivitamins, yes. Drugs, zero. How weird are we?
Well, if you were south of the border, how old are you?
I am 60.
Oh, my goodness, you're weird. You're weird. Keep exercising and eating a healthy diet and finding meaning in your life, and that's the best way to stay healthy.
Unbelievable. Dr. John Abramson rocking the boat this morning. Wow, and he's just getting started. We have to break for a news update in just a moment. We'll come back with Dr. John Abramson. And I want to stress, so we're going to open up the phone lines in this next half hour. I got to take a breath. We'll be back in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
1290.
We're taking so many antidepressants because the studies that were published showed that the drugs work. But half of the studies show the drugs don't work, and a very small percentage of those studies were actually published, Christine. So what we've got is a situation where people respond to the ordinary stresses of life, and God knows we've got a lot of stresses now. But when they feel stressed, when they feel down, that they and their doctors turn to a pill instead of looking at how their lives are unfolding. And what we find when we put all the studies together of all the antidepressants, it's only the most severely depressed people who get a benefit from the antidepressants, and then it's only one out of four of those very severely depressed people who actually benefit.
That's pretty depressing. Folks, I cannot exaggerate the importance of hearing the message from our guests this morning. We heard it from our own Chamber of Commerce recently that the costs of health care in this country are threatening to overwhelm us. Phone lines lighting up. Valerie, what's your story?
Good morning, Andy. Yeah, well, I'm double weird right behind you. 60 is looking pretty close, or it's getting pretty close, and I don't take anything. Not even multivitamins. I get everything, what I need, from water and food, and the good food.
60 is the new 40, by the way, just so you know.
No, it's the new 35.
Valerie, what do you see in your friends around you? I've said this before. My wife went to the doctor recently, and her doctor said to her, Marilyn, you are the only patient I have who isn't taking drugs of some kind. What do you hear from your friends?
Well, there's a lot of them are on different things, and likewise my family, the same thing, and apparently depression gallops in my family, but, well, maybe I'm just too stupid to realize it, but I've got nothing in that sort, just because I believe I'm not taking anything.
Well, how brave you are, especially family all around you is taking drugs to deal with the pressures of life, because it's a very stressful life, you know, so you should be popping a pill of some kind. So how do you resist the pressure?
Well, it's my body, and nobody else is going to take care of it but me.
Valerie, so much appreciate the call. We're going to get back to Dr. Abramson in just a moment, but John wants to jump in. Go ahead, John.
Yes, I had a question for the doctor.
Go ahead.
I've never taken any medications through my entire life, but just recently my cartilage has gone out of my hip joint, and I'm going to have hip replacement. Prior to that, should you just put up with the pain? Because I want to keep my activities up. I'm very active. Is it harmful to take something just on a short-term basis, like an anti-inflammatory, or should you just try to gut the pain out?
Dr. Abramson?
Yeah, that's a great question, John. How old are you?
I'm just turned 65. I'm very active.
Yep, okay.
Not overweight, eat well.
The answer is it's a delicate balance. And if you can exercise by take one or two Aleve or ibuprofen tablets or Tylenol tablets, acetaminophen, and that will allow you to exercise and stay in shape, then that's a good thing to do. You don't have to take it all the time. Keeping your blood level constant won't help. But to get relief to exercise or relief after you exercise can be useful to maintaining your overall health. And another thing that you might try is I'm not a big proponent of alternative medicines. I stick to the science. But you might want to try glucosamine for a couple of months. There's some evidence that it can help in hip and knee osteoarthritis. And if you use glucosamine, take a full dose, do it for a couple of months, you probably won't think there's any benefit. And if you don't think there's a benefit, stop taking it. And if you get worse, then you'll know that it really did gradually help you.
Okay.
John, is that to answer
your... That makes perfect sense to me. That's sort of what I'm trying to do now. Just take it when absolutely necessary.
John, I think what you and I are both understanding from Dr. Abramson, that while he thinks the agenda of the Big Pharma is very sinister, he's not saying all their product is bad. Right, Doctor?
That's exactly right. And I think, John, I think you've got it exactly right. What you want to do is keep your whole body healthy. And if it requires occasional medication... so that hip osteoarthritis doesn't get in the way of your exercising, then that's a wise utilization of medicine.
John, we have to let you go. Dr. Abramson, let me ask you this. Even if people do not relate to the medical arguments that we're making, they certainly hear these warnings that we are being overwhelmed by a tsunami of medical expenses which threaten to sink, well, first America, and secondly, Canada.
Andy, they will. The healthcare industry will not stop on its own. It will continue to create needs for its products until it is stopped. It's just like the ski industry or the tennis racket industry. They will make new products that are more expensive until people stop buying them. The problem with the healthcare industry is that the science that is used to justify the increased expense is being produced by the manufacturers, and it's too complicated and it's too well hidden for doctors and regulators to straighten it out. So we've got a problem.
Well, and that's a point that you and I discussed prior, was that people are not discerning enough to be able to see the difference between these different types of science. You've been an expert witness. You've been privy to some top secret documents that most people would not see. So you know exactly how insidious this problem is.
That's right, Pam. And when I've been privileged to serve as an expert in a lot of litigation involving the drug industry, and when I get to see the corporate confidential documents and get to see what really happened in the science, and how the companies decided to spin their science in ways that hid the problems and exaggerated the benefits, I can see that there is no way that doctors or the public or the government can straighten out the truth. And that is the problem. The doctors think that if they read their journals carefully enough, they can figure out what is corporate spin and what's the truth. But they can't, because you can't see what's not there. What we need is transparency in science. Doctors need access to the basic data from the research, which the companies won't release.
You used a phrase a moment ago, which I'm just trying to work through, and that is the big pharma creating the need for more of their product?
Absolutely.
How do they do that?
Absolutely, by lowering the threshold for disease. We've got statins, cholesterol-lowering statins. Millions, 36 million Americans are recommended to take statins. Probably proportionally that would be, 6 or 8 million Canadians. And women who don't have heart disease and people over 65 who don't have heart disease, the guidelines say that they should be on statins if they're at risk of heart disease. Well, it turns out the guidelines were lying. I wrote an article with Jim Wright, who's the head of the Therapeutics Initiative in British Columbia, which is out at the Therapeutics Initiative. They do the best drug research in the world. We had an article in The Lancet that said the guidelines are lying. They're not telling the truth. And even one of the most prestigious journals in the world, we got our story out, it still didn't change things, because the doctors who write the guidelines, the majority of them are taking money from the drug companies. 80% of the leaders of the guidelines are taking money from the drug companies. And it's like a regime. They control what doctors believe to be the best way to practice medicine, when in fact statins are beneficial for some people. But even for those people who are going to benefit from lowering their cholesterol by taking medicine, lifestyle changes are 3 to 5 times more important.
Doctor, let me jump in and let's get back to and make it really simple. Pam Killeen keeps using the phrase, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever. When I was a kid, I didn't know anybody who had an allergy. Peanut allergy, never heard of. And everywhere I go today, people are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever. How do you explain that?
Absolutely. I want to go back to Valerie's call. I hope Valerie is still listening, because she hit the nail on the head. When I was in college in the 60s, the women's lib movement was just getting going. And the key to the women's lib movement was stop treating us women as objects, as sex objects. We are subjects. We are human beings. We are not objects. Now we've got a little bit better sexual equality and less gender discrimination, but now we are all objects. We are all objects of marketing of the drug industry. And we as a people, not just women, not just men, not just children, not just the elderly, we all have to say, wait a minute, stop using us as marketing targets, as objects. We are subjects. And the core of living a good, healthy, long, meaningful life is to stay in balance the way our great-grandparents knew to stay in balance.
Doctor, I have to jump in because we have to go to a break, but I'm going to throw you a question which you can ponder during the break, and that is this. What is the greater threat to our society? And maybe it's not a fair question. Is it the bad drug dealers who are selling stuff from the trunk of their car? Or is it Big Pharma? I'm reading from one of the people who commented on your website, who's Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, who writes, some of the nation's worst drug dealers aren't peddling on the street corners. They're occupying corporate suites. Overdosed America reveals the greed and corruption, referring to your book, reveals the greed and corruption that drive health care costs skyward and now threatens the public health. So the question is, what's the bigger threat to us as a society, illegal drugs or prescription drugs? We'll be back with the doctor in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
There's many new drugs that are beneficial. There's no question about that. And it's important that people understand that. But Still, many of the new drugs that come out aren't better. The new diabetes drugs, well, they lower blood sugar, but they don't reduce heart disease any better than the older, less expensive drugs. So new only means that the drug has been approved by the FDA and that it's better than nothing.
What's he saying, Pam, that some of the drugs don't even work?
That's right. That's right. I think we covered this before on an article that was saying, I think 85% of the new drugs really are not as efficacious as they claim themselves to be.
Doctor, your comment.
My comment is that when a new drug is approved, it's tested not against the best therapy that's out there, but it's tested against nothing, a placebo. So we would like to think, and I think most doctors believe, that there's a progression with newer drugs being better drugs, when in fact newer drugs can be worse drugs.
We have just a few moments left, and I so want to drive home this message to people about the drugs that they're taking, especially the chap who called us in the 25 drugs in his medicine cabinet. What are you saying to people about their blind faith in their doctors and in their drugs and all the seniors that I know who just have medicine piled up in their medicine cabinet?
Right, Andy, that's the key question. And I think what we're finding is that doctors are going to be the last group to get this message, that we're out of control, that we're being, that the healthcare industry is dictating how we live our lives. The doctors are going to be last. And unfortunately, it shouldn't be this way, but I think the public has to help their doctors to be better doctors.
Are people catching on, though, Dr. Abramson? I mean, there are students in the United States, in medical schools, who are really, you know, pushing back in terms of the influence of Big Pharma in the medical schools.
They are, and I think the public is catching on even more. But then the public, as Andy says, the public goes to their doctor and they get rebuffed and sort of put down because the doctors believe they know best and they think that the latest, greatest medical discoveries are what their patients need. So what I would encourage people to do is to help their doctors be better doctors. If you have a problem and the doctor wants to prescribe a medicine, always ask if lifestyle change would be helpful and could you try lifestyle change. If your doctor is prescribing a medicine, always ask if there's a generic medicine. It's cheaper. It's been on the market for a longer time, which means that we're unlikely to get a safety surprise about it. And most importantly, if your doctor thinks you need a generic medicine, it's not because some cute drug rep just called on their office and brought them a gift.
Doctor, let's try to wrap this up and put a bow on it. And my question is this. What if we ignored your message? What if we don't change anything? What if we keep getting more and more overdosed, as you've focused on in your book, and we keep spending more money as governments? In 5 years, where are we?
What's going to happen? I know what's going to happen in the United States. Instead of spending 18% of our GDP, excuse me, more than one out of six of every dollar that's spent in the United States is spent on health care, we're going to be spending 25% of our GDP on health care. And the United States is spending twice as much as the other countries, and the health of Americans is falling further and further behind the health of Canadians and other Europeans. So if we keep going in the direction we're going, we're going to transfer massive amounts of wealth to the healthcare industry, and we're going to get, as Pam says, fatter and sicker and more depressed.
Which is absolute heaven for Big Pharma so they can sell more drugs.
That's it.
Well, here in Ontario, Dr. Abramson, they're saying by 2030, healthcare is going to take up 80% of our operating costs. I don't know if you've heard that, but that's what the research is showing.
Absolutely. In Massachusetts, healthcare costs over the past 10 years have gone up 76%, and all other public expenditures have gone down. Mm-hmm. It's eating up our civic society.
And that's at a time when Camden, New Jersey is laying off police officers because they can't afford them anymore. And the same thing is happening across the United States. In Ithaca, Michigan, it's so desperate, the superintendent of the local school board has asked that their schools, imagine this, be declared prisons because the schools are so desperate for basic needs for their kids. Well, we're spending money on the prisoners at a level of 6 and 7 times what we're spending on the kids. America is in crisis, and Canada is not far behind.
That's absolutely right. In Massachusetts, we've increased our budget for education $700 million over the last 10 years. And the healthcare costs just for the educational system have gone up $1 billion. So despite putting $700 million more into health, into education, the educational system is losing $300 million. Now that's what's going to happen, is healthcare, which is not producing longer, happier, healthy lives, is going to consume the resources of our society, and it's going to decrease the quality of our life, the quality of our environment, and it's going to decrease our health.
Now, I know you're not, insinuating whatsoever that we get rid of healthcare. We want to maintain healthcare, but we want to give people good value for their money. We want people to go to doctors and actually walk out of those offices knowing that they can be healthier than when they walked in, correct?
That's exactly right. There's very good evidence that getting healthcare from your primary care doctor is cheaper and more effective than getting specialty healthcare. We want to get good basic healthcare. We want medical science to progress. We want research, but we want science to be transparent. So when doctors believe that there's a beneficial change that's been discovered, it's based on being able to evaluate all of the research and not just the research that the company chooses to show the physician.
Well, right now, the research is being paid for by companies that have multi-million dollar budgets. So how is it we're going to get away from this very compromised science?
I think you have a better chance in Canada than we do in the United States, because you have your attitude is more that government can be part of the solution. And what must happen is that the science that private industry does has to be transparent so that everybody can see what the truth was. Right now, the data from clinical trials is essentially like the recipe for Coke or a poker hand in your poker playing opponent. They don't have to show you what's in their hand. They don't have to show you what the real results of the study was unless you have a subpoena and you're in litigation. And that's craziness. Medical science is a public good. It has to be transparent. Sunlight has to shine on it.
Doctor, we have just 1 minute left. I have to ask you this. One of your doctors who read your book, Overdosed America, wrote this. I have been a physician for 10 years. I have seen my profession gradually being taken over by the pharmaceutical industry. I have seen countless patients harmed, alas, even killed by drug reactions and polypharmacy. Can you, in the next 1 minute, summarize what is your message in your explosive book, Overdosed America?
My message is, don't be fooled by industry. 70% of your health is a result of how you live your life. Take back control of your own health and your family's health by exercising regularly, eating a healthy Mediterranean-style diet, not smoking, and don't drink too much. And if you have a healthcare problem, go to your primary care doctor. Understand that you may have to help your primary care doctor be a better primary care doctor than he or she is typically, because they're under the influence of the commercial healthcare industry, and use your common sense.
Real quick question, doctor. You're a smart man. Who's going to win this NHL final?
Oh, boy, that's tough. but I think that your prime minister shouldn't have taken his a government plane to a hockey game that he was going to lose.
Doctor, you've been such a treat. We thank you so much. Folks, the book is Overdosed America. It is a must-read. Doctor, thank you so much.
You guys are great. Thanks a lot.
Wow. Thank you.
He's quite a friend you have there, Pam.
I've got more of them out there too, Andy. We'll get them on the show.
Any book signings this weekend?
I'm going to be at Chapters South on the 18th and Chapters North on the 25th.
And a reminder about your website.
It is www.pamkilleen.com, and Dr. Abramson's website is overdosedamerica.com.
We are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever, folks. We got to keep talking about it. Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. Please hang up and drive so you arrive alive, and we can chat again tomorrow morning at 9 right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.